Major Theory presents Blue Dope, a podcast from the inquisitive minds of Blue and Olivia Dope, as they sit down and pick the brains of some of your favorite entertainers and entrepreneurs. On this week's episode, clinical therapist and host of the Erin Talks podcast, Erin Muller.
Hey, what's up, everybody?
Hey, hey, it's Blue Dope.
Blue Dope. We got Mr. Erin Muller in the building, yes. A.K.A. the Black Therapist. How you feeling?
I'm excellent. I'm a little exhausted. I had sessions all day.
Oh, I'm good. So that's it. It gets exhausting for you,
right,
too.
Exactly. Yeah.
Of course, I'm big on energy, so I use a lot of my energy, even through Zoom, you know what I'm saying? When I'm being a vessel and giving to people, you know, take something out of you. So I got to restore myself, you know.
100%. Before we even get into who you are, I do want to touch, because you already touched on energy. And for me, I've always thought about, you know, what the energy exchange is like between therapist and patient. And how do you decompress after hearing certain traumas that people go through? Because, like, I have a cousin, she does therapy sessions with, and I'm just like, I don't know how you do it. So how do you do it?
Yeah. So, you know, before the pandemic, I had my wife and I had an office. So me, like, physically leaving the office, it was kind of just like this automatic leaving it in the space. Mm-hmm. And once I got my car, if it's a nice night, you know, windows down, sunroof open, just driving home, that was that moment to just kind of just like detach and just focus on being home and being present. Or I would go to the gym after a session. So I definitely got to release going to the gym after sessions. But it's huge, especially if I had very intense. I do a lot of marriage counseling. So if I had a lot of intense couple sessions where they was like elevation and voice and someone stormed out the room and there's
elevation.
A lot of energy, it's a lot. It gets very intense. So it's a lot to come down from. And right. I have to be really mindful about that. And I appreciate that the social work, I'm a social worker by trade, they added just now self-care to our type of like code of ethics.
That's
type
awesome.
Thing. Yeah. That's but it should have been there. They wilded. Like,
there,
why
yeah.
didn't I have, right. So why did I just add it now? Whatever. Okay. Be happy. But self-care is so important. And I take that to a whole nother level. I know everybody should do it, but I feel like your cousin and I and all the other therapists is something that's essential that we must do, because it affects how we show up as clinicians.
Right.
I mean, it's so funny because I feel like not only is therapy new to our community, right, but the whole idea of self-care, like those are two things in itself. It's just so new. We hear about it so much more often now.
Right.
And I definitely want to get there, but let's reverse. You got to tell us a little bit about you. So where are you from? You know, what's the background?
So I'm from, born in Brooklyn, but raised in Jamaica, Queens, by a Jamaican mother and a Aruban father. So I'm quite a mix. So raised in a, you know, Caribbean household, it wasn't really shunned to therapy. So, in my household, it wasn't something that, but wellness, the word wellness is something that I grew up in terms of just like, my mom is very big on me having a voice and expressing myself and not really shutting me down, in terms of like exploring what I needed, you know, because ideally in the culture, you know, children are seen and not heard.
Right.
But she wanted to create something very different. She wanted me to have that space to, now I did get disciplined a lot, but there was a conversation afterwards, which I didn't care for, but she always wanted to explain to me why I got disciplined and things like that. And that's something that I really appreciate that I pass on, you know, explain to my son why, you know, he's in trouble or something like that. Cause usually it's just more about the yelling as opposed to the lesson behind it, so they can understand.
I mean, just at what age did that start for you? And then even father to father, it's like, I definitely had to include that, especially with my firstborn. She's just the type where she's so intellectual, you have to break things down for her. She has to understand.
She asks questions.
Yeah, she asks 20 questions. Yeah. And like, why am I in trouble?
Why?
Like, yeah.
Right.
So like what age did that start for you? And I mean, even as a father now, how have you even taken what was handed from your mother and brought that in?
Well, I think from my mom said to like really read from really early age and ask questions and stuff like that. And I grew up around a lot of adults because for my mom, I'm the only child, my mother, my father. So I grew up around a lot of adults. So I heard a lot of adult, not inappropriate conversation, but how adults engage mm-hmm. And converse. So I guess it's no stranger I'm in this field. But so I took on a lot of roles in terms of just like taking care of things. So my mom really allowed me to like my role and do things. And she trusted me, you know what I'm saying? So I developed kind of like that skill really early of taking care of things. She's like, okay, Aaron got it. You know, so I really took this, or my, you know, pay all her, you know, pay all the bills. She was just like, here's my card, pay all the bills. And I developed kind of this responsibility really early.
Nice.
Awesome. So just what exactly sparked your interest
in therapy?
In this profession, in this field?
It really found me. You know, I definitely believe in, you know, spirituality in terms of like, this was what I was called to do because I was failing economics really bad at Queens College. I took economics as my major because I wanted to be in business and I wasn't doing really well at all. So then I saw that they had sociology. And so I said, let me switch majors. And then I started taking these courses and really enjoying the field and the coursework. And then I graduated Queens College 2007, got a job at a methadone program. So methadone is for people who are addicted to opioids, heroin. Here I am 24 years old and I'm working at a drug treatment facility and I'm doing counseling with people addicted to heroin and crack cocaine. And I had no experience with those substances at all. Mm-hmm. So I really had to train myself in learning about addiction and learning about, withdrawal. So it's it's medically risked. It's adopted as a nurse there. So there are people with, you know, other underlying conditions. So I really got my feet wet in terms of counseling. Working in addiction, and if you could start, that's like really one of the toughest places to start because addiction is really, really intense. Yeah. So I had to learn really quick at 24 years old. You know, I came in very, you know, bright eyed, bushy tailed to save the world, but I learned real quick that life ain't so bright eyed, bushy tailed,
and you can't save everyone.
Right. So then I learned about how do we do harm reduction? Right. So. Maybe you don't want to quit, but how can you start to minimize the amount of substance you're using, right? And how, if you are going to use, like, how can you do it safely in terms of, like, safe needle exchange as opposed to, using, you know, contaminated needles? And how do you also take care of, like, go to the doctor and taking care of your teeth? So really talking to them about a lot of areas and not really judging because wow. People really just want to feel heard at this, but, you know, especially right. in that field. People really just want to be heard. So started out there and then, I wanted to expand my clinical skills, so I went back to Delphi University for social work.
Now you were a neighbor then because we went to Hofstra.
Yeah.
So
Delphi was neighbors. Okay.
But I mean, you know, even growing up and coming to that point where you said, "Hey, I want to be in this field," did you ever think that you would be dealing with addicts first? Because I'll tell you this: growing up, I wanted to be a child psychologist, right? And then I saw a Sixth Sense. And once I saw Sixth Sense, I'm like, nah, I'm good. Like, so I mean, what specific, I guess, set of people did you want to work with?
I'm Anna, a transgender woman.
And I'm Cam, your dad.
And this is The Transgender.
Join Anna as she chronicles her transition and Cam as he learns how to be a supportive parent.
This podcast is about embracing differences and finding common ground.
It's a roller coaster of emotions, laughter, and genuine connection.
Tune in to new episodes of The Transgender bi-weekly. Subscribe and listen to The Transgender on your favorite podcast platform.
Love you all, except the bigots.
What's the specific set of people that I work with that
like,
want to do that?
Like, no, like, I mean, did you want to be a child psychologist?
So when I went to Delphi University, like a whole bunch of thoughts was going through my mind. I'm like, yo, I want to change the game of mental health. Mm. I said, I want people to see that there are Black male therapists out there. This is all what I'm talking to myself in these classes. I'm like, yeah, I'm like, yeah, I'm not going to wear a shirt and tie. I'm going to wear my Jordans. I'm going to wear my fitted. This is when fitteds was in. I'm going to wear my fitteds. I'm going to, and I say, yo, I really want to get on a large platform and I want to show, I want to be on TV and let them see. I said, I want to be on TV. I want to be on radio talking about mental health. This is what I said to myself. Yeah. Did I know that this stuff was going to happen? I had no idea. But this is something I was saying to myself that I want to change the game of mental health. I wanted to show people that it's okay to get help.
Yes. Yes.
I mean, even when you touched on, because when I asked you about, you know, how do you decompress energy wise, even your methods give the air of, I am just like you. I go to the gym. I blast music in the car on the drive home, windows down. Like, these are the things that we do normally, and you should keep doing them rather than, you know, hearing from a doctor. Oh, you're thinking automatically the doctor's trained is going to tell you, here are the steps that you should take, and here are the things that you should do. And it has to be at a certain rigorous regimen that you're continuing, 21 day habit forming kind of thing. No, this is something that you do every day. And those are the tools that you need to use.
Absolutely. Just every, like, people, right. And I, you know, I did a live where it's like self-care is more than bath bombs and hot stones. Those things are nice, but setting those boundaries, setting limits, being intentional about connecting, you know, that drive home or taking the long way home, right. Or saying no to that person that, you know, you shouldn't be hollering at, you know, at a particular time of the night. Those are all self-care things to do to take care of yourself.
Stay away from toxicity.
Right.
Y'all heard that?
There you go.
Don't be in toxic situations.
Answering them texts at 5 a.m. thinking it's going to be good.
Right. You already know what time it is.
What you doing at 4 o'clock, 5 a.m. does not mean, yeah, I'm up getting things done. Like, we all know what that means. Toxic.
No, I mean, you definitely had to transition because clearly you had the proper learning. You went to school for it. But to kind of change the atmosphere, I mean, what was the first feeling when you did try to walk in somewhere with just your t-shirt and your J's on? You know, did people look at you crazy or?
Well, nah, because at that point, that's when my wife and I, we opened our practice. So you're ready. So that's the beautiful thing about having your own practice. You create your own thing. You know, we've serviced over 5,000 clients since we started in 2016.
Wow. Awesome.
You know what I'm saying? Afro-American, Afro-Caribbean. Nice. And we pride ourselves on being African-American run and operated mental health practice. And the freedom is you can dress how you want. People show up as you are. People, like, the big part of therapy is a therapist-client rapport and relationship. And part of that is being authentic self. So I show up in authentic space and therefore that allows you to feel comfortable to express yourself. I mean, it's a big deal. Like, coming to a stranger and processing and I'm not going to hold you and be like, oh, it's the easiest thing to do. Not at all. Yeah. It's a very serious process, you know, to really say, you know what, I need someone to talk to and just be vulnerable and share something that no one may not know.
Yeah. So I have a more of a, I guess, on a technical side, you are a therapist. You are LCSW, excuse me. What is the difference between your certification as a therapist as opposed to, say, the psychologist or the psychiatrist?
So I'll explain the two as quickly as possible. And I'll just compare my wife and I. So I'm an LCSW and she's a psychologist. Mm-hmm. So she has a PhD, a doctorate. So she, upon completing her master, she went into the PhD program, did an intensive research on, you know, Black women and sexual abuse, or women and sexual abuse. So she did a complete dissertation on that research and wrote a whole thesis, whole paper on that.
Yeah.
And then you have to do like your postdoc and be placed in at a placement. So psychologist, you have a PhD in psychology. There's also a PsyD, which is also psychologist, but that is more clinical, right? So it's not as much research based, it's more clinical. And then there's a licensed clinical social worker, LCSW, where you are able to diagnose and see people for therapy as well as a psychologist. Just that we have done, after completing our master's in social work, we've done 3,000 hours of supervised, right. 2,300 of supervised under someone else. And then we take a very hard and intense test, expensive test, to prove that we are able to do this work. Right. And then a psychiatrist is a doctor that has studied psychosis and psychotic disorders. And they also done their rounds, you know, through med school. So they've done, you know, OBGYN, they've done but they chose to work in mental health. So they're a doctor that can prescribe medication, and that's a psychiatrist.
Gotcha.
So, I mean, are there levels for the patients, right? Depending on kind of what level you're at, where you need to go to a certain type?
There's no levels. It's a level of training, okay. You know? Depends on if you want a psychologist or do you want a clinical social worker. You know, there are licensed professional counselors as well, LPC. But it's based on the state. So I don't know where you guys are based, but in New York, there's really no LPCs up here like that.
Okay.
So we have licensed clinical social workers. We have licensed mental health counselors up here, LMHCs, and we have licensed marriage and family therapists. Okay. I know it's a lot of terms, but it's a specialization, really about specialization.
I mean, because I think the big thing is, well, firstly, I did want to ask, why do you think it's actually finally become kind of quote unquote okay to go get your mental health check, right? Firstly, that, and then it's kind of, again, like with the patient, like how does someone who's never been to see a therapist even choose who to go to first?
Okay. So to answer your first question, I feel like, over time, the conversation has become more normalized. As we've seen in social media, we've seen artists, we've seen celebrities, athletes talking about it more. And, you know, us as a culture, when, you know, that's really helpful in terms of shifting the narrative, in terms of people like, okay, wow, that person that I admire is talking about it, normalizing. I guess that's something I can do and I should do as well. So I feel like having those conversations, you know, has really started to kind of really shown people that, you know, I could really talk about, you know, I could go to somebody because my art, you know, my favorite artist, somebody's doing it. So I appreciate that, that people are talking much more about it. Cause I've been posting on Instagram since 2016 about mental health and normalizing it, encouraging Black men to go to therapy. This is my t-shirt line right here.
There you go.
Black kings need therapy too.
There you go.
Which I developed because I realized that our Black sisters is going to therapy. Yo, we need to go as well.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So I started this in 2016 as well. Black kings need therapy too. Just in saying that we need it as well.
So is that disproportionate? Or is it that Black women, is it a big, much higher percentage Black women go to see, you know, get their mental health check more than men?
So women in general are more inclined to go to the doctor
true.
For medical health.
Very true.
And mental health more than men. I mean, that's just what it is. What it is.
Yeah.
What's interesting is that, you know, my Instagram page really is I'm about the whole family, but I focus on Black men going to therapy. But guess who majority of my followers are?
Black women.
Women.
There you go.
Because we like them. We like
right.
getting our shit together.
Right, you know? but it's right. So that's why I'm like,
but you're
yo,
here Black for the brothers. You're like brothers. Yo, hear me out.
Yo, right. So we got to. It's so important. Now, are they looking into it more? Absolutely, but we're still lagging behind. And it's only 1% of Black male therapists out there. 2%. Mm. So we're not even in the field heavy like that.
You make a great point that I never really thought about because. Even in my search for finding a Black woman therapist, I never thought the fact that, you know, I want to speak to someone that looks like me, that has similar backgrounds and stuff like that, and not realizing I'm looking down these lists of Black therapists and I'm not seeing many men. So I can only imagine what Black men feel like
right. If
they do go and look for a therapist.
Right, right. And if they prefer that, they prefer someone you know, of the same gender, right? So they most likely may find a Black woman, definitely. I was one of the only Black males in my class.
Wow.
In my cohort. So there wasn't that many out there.
Now, I'll be honest, like, I've never been to a therapist or anything. The most that I have ever done was just going to marriage counseling, right? And I found in that, and I did it through my church, right? And I found through that.
So that was pastoral counseling.
Yeah. Okay. There you go. Bringing it down even more. So yes. So that's the only type of counseling I've done, and it did open up things that I didn't think about on a regular basis. But other than that, like, I honestly, I never felt like, hey, I need to go see a therapist. And I'll be honest, I think over the years, like, anything that kind of troubled me at the moment, I kind of found different ways or different answers to kind of get me to a place where I was good, or at least I feel like I'm good.
Yeah.
So with that said, do you feel like everyone needs to go see a therapist, and not just being biased?
Right. No, I definitely, I'm not a therapy pusher. I encourage it, but I feel like find what works for you. You know what I'm saying? I'm definitely, in terms of, like, I'm more, you know, encouraging you to be aware, to be and encourage mental wellness, whatever that looks like. So it could be therapy. It could be increasing your spiritual activity. It could be a physical activity, just in terms of, like, just being aware of yourself more. But definitely everybody doesn't have to go to, it's beneficial. I think it's very insightful. You know, you say you haven't gone before, right? So let's have it right now. Let's go.
I see. I don't know if I'm ready.
You see,
that's probably the first hurdle for everyone. So what do I want to get broken down?
So what brings you here today, bro?
Well, I want to know about you. How you got here?
Right. So that's kind of like, people have these misconceptions about it. It's really a space to just, where it's all about you.
Yeah. Okay.
Like, it's literally, you know, you could talk about anything you want to talk about.
So people just come in and be like, yo, this is what's on my mind right now. Let's go. Let's start here.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Yo, so they come and they be like,
you unpack from there.
Unpack. Yo, so some of them call me Muller, or some of them call me A. So I'm like, yo.
They call you Mother? What?
Muller.
Oh, Muller. Oh, okay.
Not Muller. Okay.
I thought you said Mother for a second. Like, no,
they be like, yo, Muller, guess what happened? Or, yo, A. You know what? Yo, over the week. So it's just,
like, you the homeboy.
Right. So we're not, you're right. We're not friends, but it's like that dynamic, you know, and people feel comfortable.
Right.
You know, I had a session today and she was like, you see, that's why, because I said something that she had mentioned a name and I was like, yo, that name is definitely indicative of that type of behavior. And she was like, you see, that's why I rocks with you, because I was going to say that, but I said it because I was like, yo, that name definitely shows that type of behavior. So she appreciated that I could
relate.
Understand the name and the drama that comes with a name like that.
She was like, yo, Winston, keep bothering me. And like, yeah, Winston, yeah.
So I have a question for you. It's what happens when COVID rocks the world and it rocks everyone, what they thought they knew the world was, has changed, and everyone has gone through some kind of transition through this time. Who was the therapist for the therapist?
Your therapist. I have a therapist.
Okay.
So you do therapy for yourself, like you check yourself.
Yes, it's really important. Because not only am I a therapist, you know, I have a brand that I'm building in terms of the Black therapist. So wearing so many hats, you know, I also have a full-time job. So a full-time job, well, my first job is being a husband and a father. So, you know, then I have a full-time job. Then I'm also a son, a grandson, a brother. So I have many roles, you know, and I try to ensure that I'm available to everybody. So there's a space to process all of that, especially during the pandemic. You know, I had family that took ill to it. So it was a lot in terms of, like, navigating and not being able to support them the way I would like to, you know. So it was a lot of transition, and then still having to be available to my clients as well. So while I'm going through my stuff, I had to still be able to show up for my clients. So it was a lot.
Gotcha.
Did you have to find, like, any new ways? Did you get creative in the sense, like, in the pandemic? So many people have had to just try to just pivot, right? So what changed for you in that time period?
Well, definitely adjusting to virtual sessions, because I like my in-person where I could really, like I said, I vibe off the energy. So I love my in-person sessions where I can just, because I get really animated. Outside of therapy, if you see me at a party, if I ever go to a party, I'll be lined up on a wall. I'm not like dancing and really bouncing all over the place. You won't see me doing that. I will be in a corner someplace. But in a therapy session, I turn into a different person.
Yo, is anybody Willie Bounce in 2020?
I don't know. So,
we got to ask the DJ over here. Dope. Nah. See, he just said when he was partying at Adelphi.
See, and that's to show you definitely don't party anymore. We see it.
Somebody's still doing it, I'm sure.
People are on their phone in the clubs now. That's what people are doing.
You're right. They're holding up a wall.
Yeah.
Right.
You fit in right now.
Right.
Still take some pictures.
On the phone, that's it. Playing trap music. And speaking of trap.
Speaking of trap.
Trap therapist. Like, what?
That's my homegirl, Dalicia's organization called Trap Therapist. And I'm part of trap therapy. And it's really about just meeting the person, meeting our people where we at. You know, some of our therapists come from the trap as well. So it's really about, you know, I adapt it as my hood therapy because I love hood therapy. And doesn't negate who we are as clinicians, as professionals, but we also meet our clients where we're at, not, you know, using crazy, you know, terms and things that they don't jargon that they don't understand. Just really being present and available and not minimizing or thinking that they don't understand it. Is that you want to have real conversation. Nobody wants to hear a bunch of terms that they have to look up or, you know, feel like you're talking over them. No, you want to have real conversation.
Right.
You know.
I mean, one big thing over time, just speaking about the trap, right, and hood therapy, I think a lot of people from different communities have always felt like, is this affordable? Like, can I afford this? Does my insurance pay for this? How much is this going to cost me? So how do you think you've been able to overcome that to really get to those different communities?
So one thing is, and that comes up a lot in terms of the cost of therapy. While we do have overhead, we do have expenses, we do have, they charge us, you know, for our license, you know, and CU credits and all this stuff that we need to stay relevant and stay updated on everything. So we still need to be able to afford to do this work and to provide service to you. But I don't want to, you know, overcharge people or feel that they can't afford it. Mm-hmm. So I always put into perspective in terms of what do you find valuable to you? So if you can pop, lock, and drop and spend money on hookah every weekend.
Yeah.
Right. Imagine if you saved one weekend. They go your therapy session right there.
True.
Or a pair of your Louis Vuitton sandals or shoes, right? Or a bag. That's a number of therapy sessions right there. So it's all about perspective. Now, if you absolutely have, and you're not spending your money on any of those things, and I'm not knocking you, and it's still a challenge for you, you know, if through your insurance, if you have, you know, through your employer, you know, if you're self-employed and you have your own insurance as well, then you can look into through your, you know, job provider, insurance, see what therapists are on that panel. You may have a small copay, you may have a zero copay, but contact your insurance provider. I would like to explore any therapists under the plan. And then what is my copay? So that's one option. Two, this EAP through your job where you can get 6 sessions for free. Right? There's Black Men Heal that's offering free sessions as well. Taraji P. Henson, you know, her foundation is offering free therapy sessions as well. And then you can also talk to a therapist, say, you know, I really read your profile on Clinicians of Color or on therapyforblackgirls.com. And I saw, you know, that you offer, you know, self-pay. Do you offer a sliding scale? So sliding scale is where the therapist would charge you based off of your income, or they may have a flat rate. You know, some people have said, you know, hey, I really can't, that's really a, can you, you know, I really want to see you, but I said, okay, so then I will work with you. Yeah. And I have a small percentage amount of people that I would do that with for the year or something like that. Yeah. But I don't think a lot of people are informed that, you know, you can talk to your therapist if you want to pay it. Some people don't want their insurance to show that they're in therapy. And so a lot of people pay out of pocket. And that's another thing people don't know. So you can say, listen, I don't want to use my insurance. I would love to pay out of pocket. Do offer a sliding scale. So that's something that you can talk to the therapist about or the receptionist about as well.
Yeah.
I mean, you did bring up one point, and I think it's an extreme, but sometimes, you know, I think there's people out there that are scared of being institutionalized once they go see a therapist.
Oh my gosh, West Indians, I'm telling y'all right now, stop this whole permanent record and jobs won't hire you, because I've heard this for years.
I know. And institutionalized, I don't know. It has to be like severely. Right. Like to be like you're not just institutionalized because you're having marital issues or trouble with, you know, exploring if, you know, what major you want in college,
or even an anxiety attack. That's
right.
Not
right. So this right. So yeah. Right. So even so, you still have to willingly want to go. When someone is involuntarily hospitalized, oftentimes it's been a history.
Right.
They've been locked, you know, maybe locked up, or, you know, there's been a number of situations or just extreme bizarre behavior mm-hmm. on the roadside, then they may end up hospitalized. But there's still, you still have rights. You still, even if you're in the sound, even if you're in a state of psychosis, as they call it, but still able enough to say that I'm good, you could walk out. You understand? So, it's not, we have to demystify some of these things that people hear, you know, and really get right. The real, real facts.
Gotcha. So just in terms of how therapy sessions work for you, is there any homework that you give your patients, something to kind of take away for the next session and come back and answer those questions on your own, kind of giving guidance? Like, is there any particular methods that you use?
So I don't use any particular in terms of like, because it depends on the situation. It depends right. on, they may get a homework assignment in terms of to reflect on and bring it back to the next session. So it really depends. So for my couples, they generally do have homework in terms of something to work on or something to present during the next session, or use this communication style and tell me how it went during the next session or something like that.
Gotcha.
So yeah. So homework is good because it ties in the work that was done during the therapy session.
Right.
So, I mean, nowadays, are you specializing in couples? Is that your primary?
I don't know, bro, because this thing just be finding me all types of different places. I am not strategic about anything. It just be happening. I just get this call. You want to do this? I get this. Can you see me? And I just roll with it. So, because I wasn't really comfortable with couples at first. Oh, when really? I first started in the game, I was like, yo, no couples, because it's intense. You talk about energy. This is times two.
Two for one.
True.
Yo. It's intense.
And how hard is it for you to not side with the brother?
No, no, let's be clear. And I tell them all the time, I'm the relationships therapist. So I'm here for what's right for the relationship.
Gotcha.
So if something, I'm going to let both of y'all know. If one person, one party, you know, depends on the situation. But what people really like is that, and this is a dynamic that you don't really get, is that we offer, you can get both my wife and I for a session.
Oh.
So people like that you get a married couple and that we're both therapists as well. So that used to be mad fun.
That's a different dynamic.
Yeah. So sometimes I'm riding with the wife and she's riding with the husband.
I was going to ask that. Does that happen?
Yes, it does. It does.
That's interesting.
And then we model communication as well. So we would do a lot of reflection in terms of like thinking out loud about some of the things that we see. And they'd be like, yo, they talking about us right here. And we model in communication. So we was on hiatus since the kids were born. So we haven't done it in almost 5 years. So we just started back. Oh, wow. So we have a first session coming up soon.
That's awesome. Considering, especially now is the best time than any to venture back into couples therapy as a married couple, because
But she was, because she was in mommy mode. So I was like, all right, yo, you got to get back. So I just was patient. And she was like, okay, I'm ready.
I mean, I think children for anyone is definitely, it kind of changes things in life, right? It's one of those stepping stones. Like once you become a parent, things change.
Nah, for sure.
But I mean, just speaking about like the married couples, right? Like for all the married couples out there that have kids, like how does that change the dynamic? And do you have like literally couples coming in talking about parenting?
Yeah. So they come in terms of like, imagine, remember we are individual people. And then when we get connected with someone, now we're merging of lives and ideas and customs and norms may not align with each other. So in terms of child rearing, there needs to be some type of, it not to be the same, but some type of commonality in terms of what is the overarching goal. So, you know, how are we going to raise these children? And when there's disconnect and discord, that often causes challenges. And when you have parents individually that are not in alignment with themselves, then that could be challenging to raising children, because you need some structure. You need some order in the household because the children need that. But and they're looking for that direction. But if there's an absence of that, you see it show up in the children's behavior. Mm-hmm. So it's really one, y'all need to get your stuff together individually. And I'm talking loosely, but in therapy, working on that so that you could be a better individual, to be a better partner, and be a better parent.
Gotcha. So with that, do you work with young adults as well?
What age are we talking?
I guess late teens. Early 20s. I know you work with adults, but I'm just curious as to know, like, do you work with like young adults, youth, maybe like coming of age out of high school?
Yeah. So if their parents want them in therapy, absolutely. So I am a school social worker as well. So I work with, I don't broadcast it much, but yeah. So, pre-3K through eighth grade.
Okay. And,
yeah. So,
That young.
Yeah.
Wow.
So I see, you know, I see kids and I see everybody, kids from 1 to 92.
Yeah. Everybody needs therapy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's a common theme.
I see everybody. Yes.
Everybody needs therapy. So in terms of technique and style, we kind of touched on, you know, the homework aspect. Like, is there a special technique or style that you have? And or is it a more like a case by case situation for you when you're dealing with patients?
Right. So it depends on, you know, some situations will call for a particular theory or a particular type of modality, mm-hmm. but I'm very person-centered. So I'm really about, okay, so what do you want to do? And kind of guide and coach you through that. I do a lot of cognitive work in terms of CBT work. I know that's very popular, but I really feel like your thoughts become your actions. So really helping people focus on that, and a lot of cognitive work and being aware. So I'm really big in those areas. Yeah, I really work on like the person, like I'm here for you, listen to you, support you. It's not my show. Now this is guiding you and support because like I can see a little bit more clearly what some of the challenges are, and it's to guide you to see it, you know?
I said before, like I like the idea growing up of potentially being a child psychologist. I mean, I know you can't go deep into anything, but has there ever been a situation where, you know, someone might have, whether it was verbally or even tried to physically attack you or anything that made you question, why am I in this position? Why am I doing this right now?
Wow. No, thank God. No, I've never questioned. Like I love my profession, right? You know what I'm saying? This is not work for me. You know what I'm saying? I love what I do, and I feel very blessed to be able to find so many avenues with this field, you know, whether it be, you know, speaking engagements, my own podcasts, you know, a full-time job, a private practice. There's so many different things that you can do with this degree in social work. I could go into politics if I wanted to, because there's a lot of social workers that actually do a lot of advocacy work or policy change. Because that's really what social workers started out as, in terms of like, yo, do you make this policy? It doesn't really help my clients. It doesn't really help my people. So you go to Albany or wherever and talk about it and rally and fight for change.
I mean, just going right into that, I feel like not only did we just deal with like a whole pandemic, or we're still dealing with pandemic and after effects, but not only that, but it was all the civil unrest through the country, right?
Right.
So with that said, heavy. So, I mean, for the Black community, how do you feel like, has there been PTSD from just our history as a people? Like going through this now, like everything being spawned back up.
Right. So you never really cover. So it's just complex trauma. To some people, becomes desensitized to, like, when they hear about a shooting or a killing of unarmed Black man or unjustly. I think people are responding adversely to it, and that's what you saw, that unrest now. So now, the time during the pandemic, I think people had time to pause, right? So we weren't going to the movies, we wasn't going to brunch, swagging and surfing.
Right,
you had time to really see what is going, like, what's happening here? And I think people responded to that. And that part of policy, the rallying, that's what brought about change.
Yeah.
You saw all the ads and all of this stuff and people talking about it. And a lot of allies, came from the woodworks and, in terms of like, we stand and things like that. So the pandemic has really highlighted, because we had time to really sit and see what's been happening, what I'm saying? But yeah. How do you truly recover from that? Right. I feel like that's an ongoing thing, in terms of, because there are a lot of cases where there wasn't any resolve. It wasn't resolved justly, So how do you really overcome that? I think that's ongoing.
So with those instances and, seeing a lot of the crimes committed against, the murders committed against Black people on social media, seeing a lot of the, I guess, how things pan out via social media, do you feel like social media in general has an adverse effect on a lot of your patients, or is it, once again, a case by case kind of situation with that?
So it depends on how the person responds to it. I've done a number of pieces on it being okay to turn off social media, to limit trauma porn and what you expose yourself to, because like I said, your thoughts become your actions. Right. So you're starting to see, you're seeing these things on a regular basis, watching the news, that overexposure can either desensitize you or enhance that already existing hypervigilant or hypersensitivity. So you're naturally going to respond in adverse ways. You may see an increase in aggression and anger, irritability, depression, anxiety, all of that. So if that's occurring, please, just limit what you're exposing. It doesn't make you less woke, as I say, that you're not watching it. It's actually protecting yourself, right? You don't need to be down with it. And other ways to be down with it, write a letter, go rally, go get your peoples and go rally, go talk to your congressman. We don't talk to our local people. Like, yo, what are you doing for our community?
Sure.
Like really having direct impact and making a change. That's what people need.
I'll say something funny. I think one of the things that has been realized through gentrification is that there are other communities that have no problem speaking with the local politicians, because all of a sudden a bike lane will pop up and you'll wonder why.
Exactly.
It's because
they advocate and go speak and go get their needs met.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is going to be real like broad right here. But being the fact that you work so much with really the Black community, what would be your top three things that if you could change or just try to help people's behavior more to, steer, what would they be?
I don't know the top three. Let me try to think. I think being able to self-actualize, really being, aware of yourself, being aware of some of your behaviors. I feel like that is key to everything. Because if I know that I'm not a nice person, right? So you may not, you'd be like, I'm not a nice person. So how can I be more intentional about being nice? Or maybe it was me who caused that argument at the food, at the Stop and Shop. Maybe it wasn't the other person. You know what I'm saying? So like,
Accountability.
Yes, there you go. So I love the awareness. Awareness, accountability, you know what I'm saying, and intentionality. So there go your three, big hope.
Okay. So that's the start.
That's the start. That's the start. And kind of going back to what we were talking about before with, you know, turning off social media when you're seeing certain things. You mentioned that in terms of like the politics can be tied into your social work, what you do for the community. So what advice would you give? Because clearly we had just a year ago, there were a lot of riots. There were a lot of people mad. There were a lot of people feeling like, you know, we're not getting the change that we need and we're upset about it. And we have our counterparts from other races asking for bike lanes and getting it. Would you recommend various different ways other than protests? I mean, protests work to an extent, but what are some other ways that you would advocate in terms of, I guess, releasing that anxiety, that anger, but also committing to let's get changed the way we need to get it?
That's a great question, too. So part of that is getting your voice heard. So your community has board meetings that a lot of people may not be aware about. You know what I'm saying? Like your area has a council, you know, assembly person, a council person. Find out when that virtual meetings is and start asking to know them. Like, listen, my name is such and such. I'm 27 years old. I'm from this community. I've been living here, or like I grew up here, and I have some questions about, you know, the potholes in this area. I have some questions like, yo, my mom's be waiting mad long for the bus.
Right.
What's up with that? Like,
that's the bus lane, the new all bus lane.
Right.
That's how that pops up, though. Someone has to do that.
The bus lane pops up. Mom's waiting, and what's happening? Right. We have this bus lane now. Why is this still an issue?
And people don't be knowing that there's money in the community that has to be spent. And if it's not spent, I wonder where it goes. Mm-hmm. So you want to know why? Because, yo, my methadone program is in, when I used to work at, is in Fort Greene. And it looks complete. Like, it started to, when I was leaving, really start to shift from how it used to look. And now there's like blueberry muffin shops. Yeah,
Connecticut muffin. Diagonally across, they got the Chipotle. Yeah. I know which corner you're talking about. Starbucks is right there. I know.
It's like, yo, how did this? It wasn't like I had to like find spots to eat. Now, I don't know if I worked there now, I would have been lit with a whole, just a variety of.
Every day.
It's everything. And I'm like, How did that happen?
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So speak up.
We have a lot of entrepreneurs that come on our show as guests. And I think because of that, a lot of entrepreneurs really listen. So with that said, knowing that the neighborhoods have extra funding, et cetera, available, have you seen it something as a opportunity for different types of businesses to start? And would you suggest certain things that could kind of tap into those funds that are out there?
That's how you think others get funding. It ain't all the time. And they be having the resources, and they tap into the free resources and getting, and to keep their bread. Us, we have to do a susu and a partner draw and all that other stuff to get a couple of dollars together. And they know the right people to speak to get that free funding. So that's where it's all about knowledge and getting the information and getting the resources done. But you got to be in those meetings. Because I'm trying to connect to, for some mental health resources, I started a nonprofit called Modify Wellness. And I want to get free therapy services for Black and Brown.
Nice.
So, but I still need overhead.
Yeah, of course.
To pay for the therapist and pay for the electronic medical record. So tapping into the funding that's out there for mental health.
I'm going to tap into my hood therapist right now. Do you feel like the reason why we are unaware of tapping into these resources that have the funding for us is a prideful thing? Because our community has issues with asking for help. Could that be somewhat of a reason?
Possibly, but I also felt like we as people also have been let down. We've been pushed, we've been shunned by, you know, this white systemic system, you know what I'm saying? And so there's lack of trust, right? And we, at one point, we weren't able to be at those tables. So we look at redlining and look at Levittown, where they even allowed Black people to buy a house.
Right.
You know, yeah. I don't know if you saw that documentary years ago
about the deeds, Levittown.
They even want Black people to buy houses.
The deeds,
out
right?
There.
Yeah.
So I think historically, you know, in this white driven societies that we often looked not, you know, not looked at, you know what I'm saying, or put to the side. So how do we continue to shift and shift? And it's like really coming up from under that and shifting that narrative that we here and we're knowledgeable and we can, we at the table, I'm not saying we're going to be, we are at the table, just tap into those resources.
Gotcha. So I have one, well, for me, my final question, in terms of therapy, would you consider it being a, it should be a rite of passage into adulthood? For me personally, I don't know about anybody else, but I feel like, you know, me being in my 30s now, I see like a lot of childhood traumas or childhood issues or childhood habits, good and bad, that are kind of surfacing, and certain things where, like, you know, in adulthood is reminiscent of a certain situation or a certain pattern that you had as a child. Do you feel like it should be a rite of passage to allow yourself into therapy sessions, considering the fact that so much of our childhood affects who we are as adults?
I'm not the most absolute, so I don't know if it should be. I think it's great. Mm-hmm. But I also feel like as an adult, you know, it's never too late to recognize some of those things that you, how you grew up and how it shapes how you are now, that can give you insight into how you can make those changes and make those shifts and just be aware of it. Right. So oftentimes a lot of people are handed cards that, you know, is unfair in terms of childhood and how they grew up, and their parents, you know, really just did what they knew or didn't have any awareness to do any better. So how can you get to that understanding? Right. And how can you forgive them for yourself and work on those things and not to recreate them in with your child?
Gotcha.
Yeah. The last thing for me really is, I think you mentioned that there aren't many Black men going into the fields. Right.
Yeah.
And I think that's very, you kind of hear that when you speak to Black women in coding. Right. So just as a Black male therapist, what are you doing to really influence the future, Aaron Mullis?
Wow. So, you know, a lot of, if someone reaches out to me, like, hey, yo, I'm considering, yo, I see what you're doing, I think I want to go into therapy, I am available to answer any questions they have. I make myself, because that's something that I was looking for when I was in Delphi. I'm like, yo, I really want a mentor. I couldn't really find it. I don't think social media was popping as much as it is now, where people are readily available. But I'm definitely an open book in terms of helping them process, connecting them to a resource, or just even processing with them about what the process looks like. Have you considered, you know, social work or psychology or, you know, LMFT, whatever it is, just being available to answer any questions that they have. Or even some people who are enrolled in school, like, hey, can you be my mentor? So I have a lot of mentees.
Nice. Excellent.
Yeah.
So, I mean, with that said, you know, you drop gems, I think, a lot of tidbits here and there, right? So how can everyone kind of find you? Where can they follow you? Like, where's the podcast, you know?
Right.
I know you got gems on there.
All right. So the podcast is called Aaron Talks, and it's on Spotify and what's that? Apple Podcast. So on Aaron Talks, it's called Therapy Out in the Open. And check it out. You get a sense of what therapy is like. So the series I'm doing now is called The Husband Files. So I'm meeting with husbands at different stages of their marriage.
Nice.
And we have a therapy session in terms of talking about, yo, what you want to work on, bro?
On the show. You know, they're on the show. Like they're talking on the show.
Yeah,
okay.
The Aaron Files.
Okay.
Yeah, so check it out. I have a few episodes. You know, I'm doing a lot of things, so I have a few episodes on there. And then I do mental health moments, so I kind of talk about a particular topic for 1 minute.
Okay.
So I talked about, like, burnout and, you know, what that looks like and setting boundaries and So it's a real quick snippets about mental health. On Instagram, I post a lot of resources called the Black_Therapist. If you want to see therapy in practice, you can catch me on, I've been on 2 episodes of VH1's Black Ink Crew, doing therapy on there. So you could see my style on there.
I do have one question. It's a spicy question. If there was someone out, like, is there someone out there that you wish y'all could just sit them down, put them on my couch and talk to them? Is there anybody what you willing to share?
A celebrity?
Yeah, like somebody that's out there.
Who? I was telling my wife the other day.
See, I knew he had someone in mind.
At least one. There's always at least one.
Yo, I don't know so many people. She was like, yo, you need to see that person.
Like Tekashi. I want to sit down with Tekashi. Oh, talk to him.
Nah, I think I would talk to Diddy. Be like, yo, because I know he's looking for love again.
Okay.
So definitely talk to Diddy. Just process.
Yo, he was shooting his shot at J-Lo the other day.
Shot at J-Lo.
And lost his experience.
Carisha. Yeah. City Girls. Within a week.
Yes.
And legally changed his name to Brotherly Love. So you know what? I would like to see what a session looks like in terms of where he is in life.
I want to see that happen. Aaron and Diddy on the couch. Right. Well, Brotherly Love.
Brotherly Love, yes. Brother Love.
Yes. Speaking to existence.
That's it. Yo, Aaron, it's been real.
Yes.
Yo, thanks for joining, being part of Blue Dope. And we're going to make sure everyone checks you out. Appreciate you, brother.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode of Blue Dope and you'd like to help support the podcast, please share it with others, post about it on social media, or leave a rating and review. To catch all the latest, you can follow the crew on Instagram @BlueDopeTV.